Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Michael Sala with us, pioneer in the development of exopolitics. He's the author of a number of books, including his latest, Space Force, Our Star Trek Future. He has been an assistant professor, researcher in residence at the School of International Service at the American University. He has a PhD in government from the University of Queensland in Australia. Founder of the Exopolitics Institute, which is a not-for-profit organization that analyzes the political implications of extraterrestrial life. Michael, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Thank you, George. Glad to be back.
I have not had a chance to get your reaction to the June 25th report that the government sent out on unidentified aerial phenomena. Well, what's your thoughts on that? I was a little disappointed, honestly.
Yes, I think we all were. We all were expecting a lot more to be revealed. But what it did say was still a step forward. I mean, it did acknowledge the reality of UFOs. It did say that these were something serious related to national security. And so it's laid the groundwork for serious studies and investigations. But of course, for those of us that have been working in the field for several decades now, you know, we know there's so much to this field, and that if you just wait for official government documents being released, then you're going to be waiting a long time to learn the truth.
This book, Space Force, is number 6 in your Secret Space Program series. Tell me how you began to develop the entire series.
Well, I just was fascinated by the idea of secret space programs. I mean, it was something that I had come across very early on when I first got involved in the exopolitics field back in 2001. I mean, there were a number of people that talked about secret space programs in the sense of reverse-engineered spacecraft. Mark McCandlish, I mean, he was one of the presenters at the 2001 Disclosure Project press conference, and he described how he was given information about a sighting of 3 flying saucers at a air show at Edwards Air Force Base, and that one of his peers actually went to this air show and was given a tour, and that these were not crashed craft. These were not craft that were being flight test or anything. These were craft that were fully operational and basically being showed for potential customers. So these had been built probably at the Plant 42 facility there at Edwards Air Force Base, Palmdale. And these were craft that were obviously being sold to someone for use in something. And customers at that level, we're talking about organizations like Air Force Space Command or the National Reconnaissance Office, those kinds of potential customers, and of course the U.S. Navy. So it was something that really got me interested in the field, and then around 2015 I got to dive deeper into it and realized that, you know, there's a lot of people coming forward talking about secret space programs. So I started to look at these different testimonies and was able to start the process of putting together the big picture of what's going on.
The individual you mentioned, Mark McClendish, passed away just a few months ago. There are a lot of people out there, Michael, that think it's very suspicious. What do you think?
Yeah, it was very suspicious. I mean, he passed away just really weeks before the release of the June 25 report.
Yeah.
And people that I spoke to that knew him said that he showed no signs of depression or no sign that he would take his life. And so, you know, one has to ask, well, what was this done to silence someone who knew a little too much when the new narrative being pushed was that UFOs are something that the U.S. hasn't built, but that either belong to a foreign adversary like Russia or China, or could be someone else. And they had an other category in that June 25 report referring to extraterrestrial. Well, Mark McCandlish was really saying that, you know, they're our craft, that they've been built at Plant 42 and other facilities, and we have fleets of these things flying around.
To really get a better handle on the Space Force, the secret Space Force, we need to go way back to the times of Nazi Germany, where they really were the first to have, you know, basically rockets. They had the V-2 rockets, and they had the scientists that we ended up getting, and the Russians got them, the Soviets got them under Operation Paperclip for us. But the Germans really had a program going, didn't they?
Well, they did. They had two separate programs going. One was this rocket program that Wernher von Braun and others were working on that led to the V-1 and V-2 rockets. And, of course, the U.S. and the Soviet Union got their hands on the scientists that were behind that and repatriated them to their different countries. Operation Paperclip here in the U.S. And the Soviet Union had its own project. And both of the space programs of the Soviet Union and the U.S., they really benefited greatly from those German rocket scientists. But Germany also had a second program that was not under the control of the Luftwaffe, because the V-1, V-2 rocket program that von Braun was originally based out of Peenemünde, and that was run by the Luftwaffe. But then the Nazi SS took over those operations. And so the Nazi SS, they had a second program, and that was dealing with flying saucers, where they were using advanced electro-gravitic propulsion technologies, torsion field technologies. They were experimenting with up to 30 different prototypes, propulsion and spacecraft configurations that were all utilizing these breakthrough physics. So it was all done under the rubric of the Nazi SS, and they had a lot of success. And what was left at the end of the Second World War in terms of Operation Lusty that the U.S. launched, where Operation Lusty, the acronym stands for Luftwaffe Science and Technology, where you had teams of scientists and soldiers scouring Germany for all of this advanced tech to be brought back into the United States. And, I mean, they picked up the unsuccessful flying saucer craft, but the successful ones were sent down to Antarctica, either flown there or the components were put into very large submarines and just shipped all the way down to Antarctica and South America, and they just continued their operations down there.
There are some who believe, Michael, that Hitler escaped and before he fled to South America, jumped on a submarine, got in one, and went to Antarctica. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't know if he made it all the way to Antarctica. I think he definitely got to South America, to Argentina, and I know that he spent several decades in Argentina. I think he was seen, sighted in the 1960s in Argentina. But certainly Hitler was someone that gave a lot of resources to the German Antarctica operation, and they built a lot of submarines that could transport enormous resources down there throughout the Second World War. And, you know, that's been something that has been very very much debated for decades now, but recent scientific studies show that, in fact, that there are underwater entrances into the interior of Antarctica. Just a recent study, just a couple of months ago, showed that there were rivers and lakes that displayed tidal action, tidal movements, which meant that the rivers would drain out into the ocean, and then at high tide they would fill up and then drain again at low tide. And so that's indicative that you could actually have had something like a submarine go right up to the entranceway for that river under the surface of the ocean and navigate through Antarctica. And underground mapping of Antarctica shows a very extensive network of rivers and lakes. So yes, now we know that it's very, very plausible that the Antarctic Germans were able to use their submarines to navigate deep into the Antarctic interior under that, you know, 2 miles of ice and build these large fortresses. In fact, you know, there's evidence that they were actually guided to these large underground caverns which they used as bases.
We'll get more into that in a moment here, Michael. Your subtitle to your book, Space Force, is fascinating. Our Star Trek future. Tell me about that.
Well, that was something that emerged in a 2019 study that was convened by, at the time, it was Air Force Space Command. It's now been renamed Space Force. But in 2019, there was a workshop held. I believe it was in March of 2019. And then they released the report. And in that report, they outlined 8 scenarios in terms of what would happen in space 40 years ahead in time. So they were looking ahead in 2060, and they came up with 8 scenarios. And they said that the optimal scenario, the one that they needed to strive for, was precisely that, a Star Trek future. And they identified it as one where there were 3 criteria, like the you had the economic, you had the political, military, and then you had the social element. So it meant that you had unity at a political level in terms of a multinational space alliance working together, kind of like Starfleet in the Star Trek series. You had major corporations on board as well, building vast fleets of spacecraft and also going deep into space to do things like mining and space tourism and building bases and colonies all over space. And also in the third category, in terms of the social, you had large numbers of people that were willing to go into space to be the colonizers, to be the miners, to be the first generation of space tourists, and to create a new generation out in space. So they identified that as a Star Trek future, and this was a panel that was attended by space experts from the United States and different countries. NASA, of course, was there. The Air Force and the Navy were represented. And so that really got my attention, because it meant that, you know, here's indisputable proof that the U.S. is in the midst of building a multinational alliance where they're trying to get corporations on board, they're trying to get large numbers of people excited by the prospect to build a Star Trek future.
There's an incredible individual who has passed on. His name is William Tompkins. That some say he is one of the most incredible whistleblowers to step forward, that he understood ET technology, that we grabbed it from the Nazis. He stole with the Navy spies UFO plans and anti-gravity technology from the Nazis, passed it on to CEOs of American corporations. He worked for Northrop. He worked for Douglas Aircraft. Tell me about William Tompkins.
Yes, absolutely. He was an incredible individual. I mean, he did work for the U.S. Navy during the Second World War, and documentation actually proves that he was involved in some covert operation under this Admiral, Rear Admiral Boulder, that Bill Tompkins said was running this program where they had nearly 30 spies embedded in Nazi Germany in terms of their top aerospace companies, and they were reporting back on a six-monthly basis what they had seen, and they were describing work on multiple different flying saucer craft, and also that the Germans were being helped by a species of extraterrestrials that they described as reptilians.
Jeez.
And so he described the briefings or the debriefings of these Navy spies, and his job was to put together briefing packets that he would take to different companies such as Northrop, such as Lockheed, and of course Douglas Aircraft Company, and the top think tanks at the time, MIT, Caltech, and so forth. And he would take these briefing packets and brief any scientist that could help cast light on this kind of work. And so, you know, the Navy wanted to know whether or not it was feasible that these technologies were being built by Nazi Germany and whether the U.S. could build them. And so he described that. He also described how the Nazis had built a base in Antarctica that the Navy spies were revealing that there had been a base down there built, that they were taking a lot of this advanced technology down there. And he also, while he was at Douglas Aircraft Company, described designing these kilometer-long spacecraft with the help of these human-looking extraterrestrials that he described as Nordics, but now I believe that they're probably, that they were part of something, of an organization called the Galactic Federation.
He claimed he worked with a female ET, right?
That's right. He says that there were three of them at Douglas Aircraft Company that he worked with. And he said that what he would do, and the other engineers would do, would work on these designs for these very long, kilometer-long spacecraft or space carriers. And whenever they struck a problem, one of these ETs would, like, mentally interact with them and help them out. And he said that that's how they did it, that they would put ideas into his head. And so this is the way in which these human-looking extraterrestrials would assist us with developing advanced technologies. They wouldn't come in and show us ourselves. They went by this idea that, you know, you could, if you fed a person fish, you know, they'd be dependent on you for a lifetime. But if you taught them how to fish, then, you know, they can do their own, they can feed themselves for a lifetime. And so that was the approach of these Nordic extraterrestrials, that they were teaching American scientists and engineers how to design and build these spacecraft, and, you know, doing it in a way where the designers, the architects, the scientists thought it was their own ideas, and that was fine with them. They didn't need credit for that. They just wanted to help the U.S. build a secret space program, and Bill Tompkins said that that's how it all began, and by the early 1980s, that the U.S. Navy began deploying the first of its eight space carrier battle groups.
How credible do you find William Tompkins to be?
I think he's very credible because, one, he had a lot of documentation proving that he had done the things that he says he'd done. You know, I mean,
and he had no reason to lie about this, did he?
No, he didn't. He didn't at all. And it's very interesting, George, because only a week ago, I interviewed, along with Dr. Robert Wood, I interviewed the son of Bill Tompkins. This is Dean Tompkins, his son. And for the first time, he told us what he had been told by his father. And he said that he remembered his father talking about extraterrestrials and secret space programs from when he was very young. And he said that he and his older brother didn't believe it. But they said that because his father believed it and because their mother believed the father, Bill Tompkins, that, you know, they were willing to listen to it. And then he says that at a certain point, his older brother had a UFO encounter. And once he had that UFO encounter, then he became a believer too. But that was very, very reassuring for us that are working. We're working on the third volume of Bill Tompkins' memoirs now, and we're putting together all the interviews that he did, and that hopefully should be released in the next 3 months.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.